What's up, everyone? This is Press X to Start for the Culture, Episode 4. We are joined today by a very, very special guest. You will hear from him very shortly. But before then, I am DJ, aka Did You Know? The Division 2 was okay, okay.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Just okay, okay. Okay.
It's all right. And we are joined by Doug,
aka Douglas, two times.
Oh, ooh. Two times. Okay. Two times. Okay. And that is Cam, aka
the Salt and the Segways.
Okay. It's Sean MF Roth.
Hey, and what does the MF stand for?
Mayonnaise fingers.
you just keep coming with them.
And Hasheem Hathaway, aka Shimbo, / entertainment and sports gas bag.
Awesome. Ooh,
let's
awesome.
Go.
Bang.
All right. So before we get into this, I think we have a word from our sponsors.
Hey fam, have you been enjoying this episode of Press X to Start? Want to make sure you keep getting the best laughs, latest news, and most fire takes? Then we're going to need your help. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our show. Then tell three people about the podcast. Could be friends, strangers, loved ones, or hated ones. Every little bit counts. And after you're done with that, please follow us on Facebook at PressX2Start, Instagram at PressX2Start, Twitter at PressX2S, and YouTube at PressX2StartTV. And if you're done with all this, well done. Many thanks. You're one of the good ones.
And we're back.
All right, so let's begin with our guest, Hasheem. Thank you very much for joining with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we want to start with just a few questions about who you are. Where are you from, and how did you get interested into video games?
Well, I've been a gamer all my life. My background is I come from a little town in northeast Indiana called Fort Wayne, and I lived there most of my life between there and Indianapolis and Bloomington, Indiana. I made my way to the East Coast about 7 years ago, following a public relations job, but over the years I've mixed that with a bunch of freelance writing. Media. It's funny, I move away from Indiana and then I ended up having a couple radio gigs. My last one just ended a month ago. I'd make weekly appearances and then sort of writing here, there, and everywhere, including my site, which is Never Daunted Radio Network at www.neverdaunted.net. We're currently rebooting and revamping. That's where a lot of news, reviews. We did podcasts for a good 3 years, and now we're going to do that again here in the next year or so. But I try to get as much out as I possibly can, and I came across an opportunity to pitch for a Black History Month article at IGN. And
hey.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. You're good.
And they were interested in what I cared about, which was always interesting from a place like that because – it's not necessarily known for the most diverse voices, and when there's ever a little diversity sprinkled in, everybody just rages back like, oh my God, you're not taking my toys away, stop it. But I play a game called Guns of Glory, which is not really a great game, but it's sort of a really big time waster, and you get to have avatars and things of that nature. And what I found is that the black avatars, you had to pay a premium for.
Yeah.
To me, I was like, that's no good. So I figured I had an opportunity to write about it and say something about it. And so I pitched IGN, I pitched the editors, and they loved the idea, and we got to work on it. And so they waited until the very last day of Black History Month to drop my article, but apparently a lot of people read it, which I'm very, very grateful and appreciative for.
They saved the best for last.
Exactly.
Hey, right. I'll exactly take that.
Yeah, that article was awesome.
I was very appreciative, though,
awesome.
Because it gave us an opportunity to have the sort of conversation that I wasn't seeing in the gaming space. And judging by some of the comments, I see why.
Awesome.
Yeah. So that article was like really, really awesome. And it's so crazy that we actually get to talk to the creator of that article.
And for those who may be interested, it is an opinion piece on IGN called Video Games Still Have a Way to Go with Avatars.
Yes.
Now, not to interrupt, I want to put a little background to that because when you're a freelance writer, one of the struggles that you have to face is working with editors to come up with a headline. I had a very specific headline, and it was the first thing that they threw out. So I figured, since we're talking about it, I want to share it.
Go for it. Please.
The original title of the piece was Fear of a Black Avatar.
Fear of a Black Avatar.
And okay. That went away almost instantly.
Like, I don't think we're going to be able to do that one.
We got to take out the blackness out of the title.
You know, the funny thing is, it wasn't even a conversation. And as long as I've been writing here and there, one of the first things that I had to learn as a writer, especially a freelance writer, is that I have no editorial control on some of the big things. Now, that's gotten me into trouble. Not to veer away from gaming, but I can think of one situation where I wrote for a website called Your Tango, which is normally geared towards women. But hey, money's money at the end of the day. And I wrote a story about a certain specific thing that happened to me and in my background. And so the editors looked at it. They loved the piece. But when it came time to create the headline, they basically painted me in a position that I didn't necessarily say that I was in. And that article got popular. And which is a good thing for me because it's more people reading my work. But then, oh, you're the guy that thing happened to. And I'm like, well, it was a little bit more in depth than that. But when it kind of, that was one of my biggest lessons about learning about giving up editorial control to things like headlines. So I'm just grateful they published the piece.
That's where you hit them with the, well, actually.
You can't control what has legs.
Yeah, that's true.
And how people interpret it and take it.
Yeah.
So can we talk more about the IGN piece? What was the reaction? What was the reaction of the public after it was published?
Yeah, because I'm gonna be honest, my initial gut reaction was to look through the comments.
right.
That's all one of my primary things to do. And as a person who ran a website, I always go through the comments because I think that in this age of social media, a lot of the things that we say to people is predicated on the idea that they can never respond. And just like this, on some of the more caustic comments, I dove right in and I went to Twitter. So there were people talking about it on Twitter. I would talk to them directly and you would just see the bass in their voice go down quicker and quicker because it's really, really hard to challenge somebody's thoughts when they're asking you to tell me what you really think.
Yeah. Like
keyboard gangsters, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I will say this. I was very heartened by the pod. I mean, I came looking for two sorts of comments. One, I wanted to come see the comments of the people who were genuinely engaged. Mm-hmm. And that's positive or negative, but they were genuinely engaged. And you could tell who that was pretty much right away. And then I would go for the trolls because the trolls are neither sophisticated enough to have this type of conversation, nor are they even interested in doing it. But the people on the other side who are wanting to engage, even if it's, I mean, I got engaged by some people who just honestly weren't very smart on the issue. And you get those people, they're known by the whatabouts. So why isn't there an emphasis? Why didn't you write an article about having more Hispanic or more Asian players as lead avatars?
Well, you're speaking from your perspective. That's what comes into me saying, how can you can't tell a person how to tell their story.
And actually, if anything, I think one of the larger messages of the editorial was about the need for representation in general, because you also brought up the statistics from the USC study about how, you know, Black representation, it could be better, but when you look at Native American, for example, this like hardly and so it's anything. I think if you read
that piece
in totality,
Creed.
I was gonna say we had the one character from Prey 1, the first Prey. He was Native American.
Well, and the people who had that conversation with me, I knew that if they automatically went to, why didn't you mention this race or that race, they weren't really interested or concerned about any race other than theirs being represented.
Yep.
And it's because it's not like I like to see more white characters. It's just that they have been the default, and therefore any conversation about something other than them or outside of them makes it seem as if there's a trade-off. There has to be something taken away from the white guy in order for the Black guy to have something. And that's just simply not the case.
Right. Right. Like you're not asking them to remove the 12 hair options for the white person to introduce 5 hair options for the Black person. You're just asking for the extra 5.
Exactly. And one of the interesting things is when these things are done, and they're done in small amounts where there's no hoopla or mention brought behind them, no one cares.
Mm-hmm.
I can make a character look more like a black character. One of the games that I automatically think about is any of the EA Sports games, but particularly Tiger Woods Golf. There was a point where with Tiger Woods Golf, you could essentially take a picture of yourself, upload it, and the game would start to bend and shape and mold it so that it looked more like you, but then you could add or subtract to that. And so therefore you could create more accurate black characters, but
right.
They're just simple characters. It's not a character that's driving the narrative of a story. And I wanted to posit in the piece, and I used God of War as an example of this. Well, you know, nothing about Kratos is accurate to any myths that we learned growing up, but it was tied to Greek myth or Roman myth. Well, my question was, why couldn't you do it with African folklore? The difference is the same largely because there's still supermen and superhuman beings in African folklore, but you chose Greek mythology. And it was interesting to see some of the responses to that. There were a few very thoughtful responses, and I dug that. But then there were people saying, well, we don't know anything about African folklore, so why would we ever do it? Like, you're not Greek either, buddy.
Right.
they chose not to know anything about African folklore.
You are from Minnesota. Right. Calm down.
You have just as much a relative ties to Mount Olympus as you do Mount Kilimanjaro. I mean, it's the damn same thing.
Yeah, so one of the things I wanted to ask you is, when I read this piece initially, I was just like, man, IGN let this in here. And initially, like, I was like, this would be good for like Kotaku or something like that, that usually has more of a social justice bend. How did it feel like particularly getting to that IGN piece, that IGN audience that is a little bit more dubro or
homogenous?
Yes. Oh, and I thought for example, you weren't writing about Madden.
Oh, I thought it was hilarious. In fact, that was part of the motivation to write the piece. Number one, the editorial, like, if the people who read IGN every day really knew the editorial staff, they would be complaining. I dealt with only women. All the editors were women. And they were the ones spurring the conversation. And it was these women who decided, not as a gimmick, but rather as, here's an opportunity for me to open a door and call out for anybody. In fact, they were very interested in people writing about games who were not gamers or not your traditional gamers, because they wanted to use a month to bring in voices that had never been featured on IGN before. So I think that personally, that was sort of chasing a white whale in the sense, because I knew that I was creating an article that was going to instantly rub against the grain of the average IGN reader. So half of the payment for me was getting to see the comments and seeing people lose their minds. The other half, though, the more important half, was finally seeing people, because this is the cool thing about the comments. It's not the complaining and it's not the trolling, but it's seeing the people step up who you know have never really stepped up in a comment section on IGN and say, I've been waiting for this.
Yep.
Yeah.
I haven't bothered going on IGN in years because it's like GameFAQs and YouTube comments is a cesspool.
Oh, yeah.
The quality has gone down over the years. I used to go there daily, back in 10, 15 years ago? When they were the shit. But yeah, so it was interesting to see something like this on there.
Yeah, like
not to interrupt, but I would argue that writing about gaming is about writing about anything on the internet. The quality has gone down to a certain extent because, now, if you think about the heyday, for me, the heyday is the 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah.
That was my personal sweet spot as far as culture. I mean, I've been gaming since Atari, but where culture was at its highest was in the late 90s and early 2000s. And back then you had Electronic Gaming Monthly, you had GamePro, and these had full staffs of paid writers. Now, game journalism, all journalism, for the most part, is a gig economy. They have to find people to write freelance. And sometimes you'll get a guy who can write an article well. You get somebody who isn't as good, but they still get paid because at the end of the day, they need content. And I think when you see gaming sites start to lose credibility or start to lose potency in the writing, it's because they don't have full staffs anymore. They have staffs of editors, but they don't have, you know, staffs of writers that you can get to know or can trust their words and opinion anymore. This just doesn't exist.
It's like they don't have the reoccurring writers that contributing like frequently. It's just
absolutely
different people here and there.
You know, I want to dig a little deeper into your editorial piece, because you bring out quite a few examples of video game characters that shows varying levels of representation. One of whom is CJ from GTA San Andreas.
Right.
Who, yeah, I never had plans to play GTA San Andreas, but I played GTA 5 with Lamar. And they both have very similar quality. They're coming from an urban background. And there is a push pull when it comes to representation over showing not just any black person, but you showing the right black person.
Well, I can't be mad at their representation of CJ, because it was in line with the series theme of the main character. So it's not like,
yeah,
it was the first Grand Theft Auto and we chose to make something with a black guy as a gangster. Like, I'm sure anybody wants to see themselves in Grand Theft Auto in some capacity. So,
but it kind of gets to a conversation we've had on similar casts where, like, as black people, we're very sensitive about how we're represented.
Yeah.
And so, for example, tons of Italian folks have been represented as mobsters and gangsters in Grand Theft Auto. But, like,
are they mad at that representation?
Not at all, but.
Not at all, boy.
The moment we get,
we don't necessarily know, though.
We're not in the inner circle.
That's true.
So yeah, yeah, we're not
a part of that conversation.
Yeah. So the question isn't, how do you balance that?
Well, okay, let's talk about CJ and let's talk about Lamar, because I think there are two specific differences in the representation of both characters and why I personally feel CJ is a problem and Lamar isn't. CJ is portrayed as the stereotypical black hoodlum gangster who, because he's the hero and the protagonist of the game, has to be given redeeming qualities. He's trying to dig his way up out of the hood. That lends itself to a number of problems of representation. But with Lamar wasn't necessarily a gangster when the game started. He's working some guy's auto shop.
Yeah,
he's a regular guy. In fact, the choices that he's forced to make him a far more fleshed out character, because there's some duality there. He knows the reality of the streets that he lives in. He knows, you know, what is expected of him, but the choices that he makes isn't to forward any level of gangsterism, but to actually improve his life, because he's surrounded by gangsters. He doesn't want to do, you know, the quote unquote gangster shit that they talk about, but he makes the choices that are designed to at best help him.
And what he feels like is going to help him get up out of the.
Exactly. And that's the thing. In fact, one of the things that I enjoy is that as you progress with Lamar, he's not like, he's moving out of the hood. You know, if you do his character the way that it's supposed to be, at some point you own a house in the mountains.
Franklin.
Yeah. Sorry, not Lamar. Yeah. Franklin. And the thing is that Franklin has opportunities, and it seems like all of his opportunities are largely meant to separate himself from the hood, meaning he doesn't want to be the Pope of the ghetto. He wants to live like other people do, but more importantly, he wants respectability.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
And that's the thing. Well, you know, I like when I'm playing GTA 5, like, you know, Franklin, that's the one protagonist you move out throughout his course. And you have Lamar, his best friend, who's like, I guess his connection with the hood, short term. And even though you're playing as Franklin, you're going through his travails, to me, I actually had more of a liking towards Lamar, because Lamar seemed so authentic and had his own, like, value to his character. Like, there was something there, whereas Franklin, to me, was somebody for whom was at some points almost a little bland. Like, Lamar, I have a cousin like Lamar.
Some people are bland, though.
That Lamar is still semi-caricature, whereas Franklin represents assimilation.
Mm. I like that.
Yeah. So, to your point, I view Lamar as an anchor. So, as we talk about assimilation, we talk about black people when we start progressing and moving. Like, really, what Franklin wanted was, like, white people money. Like, that's the reason why he went to Michael.
Yeah.
Because Michael was, like, the dude. And even, like, the way you play the missions, like, I know how I played it. I end up choosing to save Michael over Trevor because...
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Trevor's just horrible.
Yeah. You could have saved both of them, you monster.
Trevor had to go. But when you saw Lamar's interactions with Franklin, it was primarily as a way of saying, yo, let me remind you of who you are. Like, no matter how far you go, because we do think about, like, sometimes as black people, when we get money, our natural thing is, like, sometimes I'm on a whole nother level.
Let's cut a couple extra deep layers in GTA 5. I think pieces could be written about this game as a whole.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of the three characters, who is the even keel character? It's Franklin.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yeah.
Franklin is not the cold-blooded murderer. Michael represents, in a way, Michael represents the blackness of everybody was rapping about Versace. And basically, you come from a low background, but you want to put on the veneer of something more special.
Yeah.
Right. And the lunatic, the crazy guy, what's his name?
Trevor.
Trevor the nigga. And here's the thing. This is why I like, it blew my mind the more I played the game, because I looked at Trevor. Trevor's the nigga. He's the one who comes from the lowest background.
He's pure id.
Who wallows in filth, who loves who he and is unabashedly. Like, if you didn't know that Trevor was just hillbilly, you'd think when you got in that rusty pickup truck of his, the first album that you hear is NWA's Niggas for Life, because that is who he is. And I found it refreshing and even ironically enjoyable that he's the white guy. And so
a nigga can be anybody.
Yeah, right, that's true. But
when I look at Franklin, that's where I look at it like, yeah, he's a little bland, he's a boring, he's the easy path. He is the easy path. But he also represents something that all of us, some of us come from backgrounds that were great. Some of us come from backgrounds that weren't so great, but we knew that we had to maintain. Not every story was a tragedy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Whereas with CJ's paid by the numbers, man. See, and that's why I've always had a problem with him, because yeah, he's the hero and he does transcend his surroundings, but he does it from the perspective that if it were any other day or any other story, he would just be that dude gangbanging in the hood.
Yeah. There are those people that exist, though. There are still stereotypical people that exist out there. So,
but with our representation being so narrow,
yeah,
they exist. Why are we forcing ourselves to talk about them? Now, we don't have to go to the other end of the spectrum where everything is based on the Huxtable
of the world
veneer. Like, we don't get enough stories about middle of the road black folks who aren't, you know, one foot in the grave, or who aren't the uber exception. Just a lot of us, the five of us sitting right here, we represent the middle where we live our lives a certain way. But, you know, I can go in and out of my house and not worry about somebody coming to shoot me. But at the same time, I don't have a Harvard education. So I'm that big, expansive middle. And that's where we fight for our representation. We want to be part of what is considered the norm, not the exception.
Yeah. Then I'm going to go to another character you mentioned in your article, which is Marcus from one of my favorite games, Watch Dogs 2, where he is a character for whom I've never really seen in video game. He's not a sports player, and he's not in a ghetto life urban caricature that we also see often. He's a black gamer nerd in San Francisco who lives his life with his laptop and Rover. So how does his portrayal fit in terms of the, I guess, the progression of minority representation?
I think he is the progression. I think if we're having conversations about what can be done, the five of us sit in a room with five developers and five executives, and we say, here is the way in which we want black gamers to move in a sense. Not, okay, let's make everybody the boring middle guy, but no, let's take players who represent something that exists, because just like the gangbangers exist, the black nerds exist. And the black nerds are the ones that will be the first to pay money to play the video game. So let's tell some stories from that perspective. Does that mean that you now have to focus on the default? One of the things that I wrote a piece for Bleeding Cool magazine about 4 or 5 years ago. It was called, and they actually put my title through, which I appreciated, but it was about Michael B. Jordan being cast as Johnny Storm. And I said that was more token race bending as opposed to a character like Nick Fury, which wasn't bending at all. It was saying that Nick Fury could be anyone. But doing what you had to do with Johnny Storm in that movie, you had to do a lot more explanation, and all that explanation had to go to help you explain why he's black. To me, that is a problem. And largely because now it's, okay, instead of building and promoting black characters that already exist, because remember, this isn't a time that was before having the Falcon in the Winter Soldier or having Black Panther as a film. I think Black Panther as a film changes everything because now you can have the black hero and not have to say, okay, we're going to take the Flash and make him black.
Not only that, it was like one of the most successful.
We can use an established character and then we can shove some diversity in here. That's how you build resentment. I don't want to build resentment with white people. I want white people to look at me as the same as they look at themselves. Will that ever happen? Who knows? But I know the first step is not to make James Bond black.
Yo, he's just got the swag for it.
But James Bond's a Scottish man.
But here's
he got old blood in Scotland.
A signature role friend, called Luther. Still. Great show. I would watch tons of movies on that. So the idea here, and he even said the same. It's flattering to him that people would want him to be James Bond, but he's out here creating new characters that are based on people from the ground up. So why are we continuing to have to beg for respectability by being portrayed as the white
heroes? Of some sort?
Yeah.
We want the white people, like, there was some controversy with Black Panther where they were showing some advertisement where there was a Halloween costume and it was a white kid wearing a Black Panther costume.
I didn't have a problem with it.
I love that. I love that.
That was great.
I said it good. I want white people to dress up like black people because that's not blackface.
Yeah.
That's saying I look up to T'Challa as a hero.
But exactly. I did see people who had a problem with that. They were like, why can't black people have their own thing? Get off of Black Panther. They didn't want white kids in a damn commercial for the Black Panther toys.
Here's the thing. Are they okay with black kids dressing up as Superman and Batman? Like, I love Batman as a hero. They are. But, you know, he's a rich white boy from Gotham.
Right.
I connect with that.
See, the thing is that if you make Batman black, make Bruce Wayne into a black man. Not Batman, because there's other Bat family characters. I guess there's one that was black. And there was some reason behind it. But... Mm-hmm. The fact that Bruce Wayne is a psychotic white man who felt that the only way to fix the pain in his heart was to become a vigilante as opposed to pouring that money into the community so that crime wouldn't necessarily be an option.
Dang.
Obviously, that doesn't work for comic books. We
never thought of that.
I'm about to say, you're hot.
Bro, I was cool with you until you came over here with this Batman slander.
Batman. I love Batman, but I recognize Batman for what he is. And I think that, you know, I'm not Zack Snyder and saying, well, what do you mean? Why wouldn't you believe that Batman wouldn't kill people? Part of the reason why Batman doesn't kill people is why Batman still exists.
That's true.
It's what makes him different.
That's true. That was my big problem with Batman.
The police would have gunned him down.
Yeah.
Batman is the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yep.
Black man.
So one of the conversations we were having with you earlier that I want to bring back is a question about how has gaming changed for you? Because you said you started back in the Atari days. Sure. Now we're into this, you know, PS4, Xbox, Switch generation. How has gaming for you changed now that you're... I think gaming,
like we were talking about earlier, gaming for me is based more on convenience as opposed to anticipation. Wow. So we think about the days when, yes, I started gaming with Atari, but the first idea of anticipation for me was in the early 90s when everybody was at the arcade playing Mortal Kombat. Yeah. And we knew that Mortal Kombat 2 was coming. Now, the internet wasn't really out yet. And so you'd get all the information from the gaming magazine. So I'd see a section in Game Pro or something talking about, wow, there's going to be twice the characters in MK.
Oh, word of mouth from your friend whose uncle works at Nintendo.
Right, yeah.
Like that. And so that brought a new layer to me as a gamer, the idea of anticipation. I can't wait for that. And now, as a gamer who isn't as much of a gamer or whose gaming has become more diverse because not only do I play video games, but I play... card games like Magic the Gathering.
You didn't say spades, what?
I'm sorry?
You didn't play spades? I didn't hear that.
Well, yeah.
And Biscuit?
Yeah. We all played spades and played Tonk and we did all the things, but that wasn't gaming. That was just an afternoon. Like, you never attack. Nobody ever, oh, I play spades, though. Or does that make you a gamer? No.
Right.
Table didn't make me a gamer necessarily. That was just entertainment. That's what we did. But when I was waiting in line to play Mortal Kombat 2 or when I was standing out in line at midnight to pick up Modern Warfare 2, that evolution of waiting, I can't wait. Or when Grand Theft Auto 4 came out, oh my God, I remember being in line around the corner of a Best Buy waiting to pick that up and then tearing right into it. But as I've gotten older, gaming has taken a different sort of position in my life. And so I'm much more apt to play the handheld games. Like right now, the top games that I'm playing right now, I'm playing, like I mentioned, Guns of Glory, which spurred the article to begin with, mm-hmm. Golf Clash and some puzzle, you know, puzzle game. Yeah. And I do that because if I'm, you know, sitting in long traffic, I can play a little bit. Or if I'm sitting at the office and there's nothing going on, I can play that a little, something to sort of, you know, unwind my mind.
Yeah.
You know, the most recent game that I purchased was Red Dead Redemption 2.
Hey.
And I was happy to do it, but, you know, that's a game with 70 plus hours of gameplay and yeah, with my busy life, I can jump in every once in a while, but I'm not in any danger of finishing the game anytime soon. I'm more apt to jump on games like Fortnite Battle Royale or Overwatch because I can just jump in, I can play, and then I can turn it off and not think about, oh, did I save? Or it's just an ephemeral experience. You get in, you get out. And I think that that is where gaming is as a whole. And that's why we're starting to move towards streaming options where instead of people going out and paying the $60 to buy a game, I'll pay for a subscription, breeze in, play a few games here and there, go off and not think twice about it.
So actually about the streaming news that's been breaking out, what is your take on the whole thing? Like with Stadia and even the Apple Arcade, like how do you see that going in the future?
Well, it's going to speak to people much like myself who no longer are interested or as interested in the investment in games. Like, I don't need to build the gaming library because I buy a game and I play it for a week and then I shuffle it off. I remember when I'm buying a new game every week, and then I got to the point where I wasn't finishing those games anymore. I bought Fallout 4, just to give an example. I bought Fallout 4 at the midnight release. I played 2 hours of it because I remember what Fallout 3 did to me. Fallout 3 cost me a relationship.
Oh, you were ready to just throw away another one, huh?
At this point, when I bought Fallout 4 at the time, I was single. And so I thought, well, you know what? I'm not losing anything. And then I realized I'm not playing it. And then I realized I don't care if I play it. And then when Fallout 76 is announced, I don't necessarily feel a necessity or a need to go get it. And
that's probably a wise decision too.
That's sort of what gaming is representing. So with streaming, now I don't have to agonize over a decision. You want to play a little bit over here? You play a little bit over there. You find a game that you like, then you can play it a lot. But now streaming allows me, much like video streaming, so it's the same concept at the end of the day. I can just pick and choose what I want to do and how long I want to do it for. And if I don't want to do any of it, then I don't have things stacking up in my library where I got to move the stuff around.
Right.
That's a way of looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good take on it, actually.
But I get the other end of it, too, where people are not necessarily happy about giving up physical media because it feels like you don't have an ownership or a freedom to do what you want when you want. Like, go ahead.
And then, no, I was going to say, and then, like, it's like the technology behind it. So, like, I mean, even though most games are always on and we're dealing with live service games, but some people just, like, for example, if you live in Wisconsin or middle of nowhere, like, how are you going to be a part?
That's not even the issue with them. With Google and PlayStation, you have your digital stuff. At any point in time, they can just ban your account and you have no more access to things that you have purchased. Like, if you do a chargeback on Sony's PlayStation service, all your stuff is gone. Google, if you do a chargeback or if they have an issue with your account, they can wipe your whole account.
They could.
Yeah, that's why I like physical media.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Once I bought it, it's mine, quote unquote. Not you bought a license to use it.
And exactly.
If we feel like shutting down the servers, then tough titty.
Yeah. So, like, the idea of keeping games as a history piece will go extinct, essentially, when we move into streaming, because it's going to be up to essentially the publishers to keep those servers running.
You can pull out your Atari from 20 years ago. Yeah. You can pull out your Sony PlayStation from a decade or two ago. You know, and play that with your kids. Can you find your favorite Google Stadia game or Apple Arcade game and play it 10 years just because you got a bite of nostalgia?
Right. Although I will say that I think out of all the companies that's going to be doing streaming, Google would probably be the one to be like, yes, you will. Because they have the money.
Yeah, but then they're just going to start up another gaming service.
Right? Well, I have a question for you, Hashim. Then, when it comes to the next generation, do you see yourself going out and purchasing a new console, or would you invest in a Stadia?
It's a good question, because I recently purchased an Xbox One S or X, whichever one. And the funny thing is I didn't do it because I wanted to update my console. I did it because I bought a new 4K TV that I wanted to be able to watch Netflix with HDR. So the Xbox One that I had doesn't really serve my purposes anymore. So to answer your question, I think the idea of the console, it should be dead now. If we're being super honest, the idea of the individual console should be dead. There should be no PlayStation and no Xbox One. It should be all driven by developers so that you can play. I think it hurts the gaming industry to me, as someone who is a casual gamer at this point, that Spider-Man is only available on PS4 or that the Halo series is only available on Xbox. It's at the end of the day, these are entertainment machines, and therefore we should have an equal opportunity to get to the entertainment. And if that means paying a premium for some titles over others, I think that's something that we can stomach. And any App Store purchase, we're starting to see that sort of thing bear itself out anyway. And I'm not a big fan of the one price for a game and then all of a sudden, you know, everything's an upcharge. I realize that's how games like GTA, Stay Alive, or even Guns of Glory, like I play. And it's interesting. I want to make a quick to refer back to the article itself. I was contacted by the developers who run Guns of Glory because they saw the article. and while I only use them as a sort of entry point, the fact that somebody said something in a public forum spurred them. So we're talking about it with our developers. How should we do this? What's the expectations? Awesome. And to me, that says, hey, these guys are listening, and that's good, but we need to make the conversations a lot more focused and a lot more money driven. The fact that I mentioned that I had to pay money for a black avatar means that if I can't give you the money, or I can't, if I'm offended that I have to pay for this, which means I won't pay for something else, then they're going to try to remedy it to make sure that I, the consumer, are taken care of.
Yep.
But absolutely. When it comes to the exchanges of diversity, they have to be related to the monetary end of it. Otherwise, what is the purpose or for them to go out of their way to change anything? So a lot of our conversations have to highlight that, yes, the black dollar does have value, and certain concessions will only increase that market share.
But how does getting into those conversations about saying the black dollar does have value then prevents us from getting other conversations about, for example, black people proving themselves or justifying themselves, their existence to like white people? Like, if I'm going to say, like, please do this because my black dollar has value, then I'm inherently getting into a conversation of, here, white person, please, I'm trying to prove my humanity to you, you know?
I think that to have that conversation, you are consciously going to be giving some things up. But isn't that the whole anti-life equation about being black as it is? Yeah. In order for us to benefit, we have to sacrifice. So, and sacrifice has been such a part of our struggle, our society, our culture. Our culture is based around struggle. And so in the very instance where we might even see something as too easy, we become instantly distrustful.
Yeah.
So we have to go into these conversations knowing that it's not going to be, hey, let me show up and you tell me what you're going to give me based because I just said something. That's never going to be the case. It is all quid pro quo. And so the one thing, if I could suggest that, is that if there is a increase in diversity, we have to start pouring money into that. Because just use the comics. I'll use Marvel Comics as an example. There were rumors. It was scuttlebutt. None of it was true. None of it was ever true. But somehow it got out that the idea was that Marvel would stop publishing comics.
I did hear something like that.
Yeah,
they would forward everything into other efforts where the money is actually showing up at. Mm-hmm. And instantly the sort of Gamergate sort of conversation or Comicsgate conversation went to, well, see what happens when you try to inject diversity?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? They are right. And so how do we combat that? It's not enough for us to start saying or demanding diversity. It is up to us to support it. How many people are buying Captain America since Ta-Nehisi Coates started writing it? Have any of you bought a copy of Captain America?
That might be a dying medium, though.
But it's dying for a reason, because it didn't. The medium is dying because it didn't evolve with its buyer base.
Yeah.
Now I paid the 75 or whatever bucks to get the DC Universe for a year. I pay $8 a month for the Marvel Unlimited. Yeah. And yeah, that kind of to me is the future. I don't necessarily want the paper comics anymore. Sometimes I do, because of nostalgia and some things I want to save. But I like reading comics. So I'm going to read comics on the easiest format that I can read comics on. But the problem is they're still saying, hey, I'm going to charge you $4 for a digital copy, when the $4 in the printed copy, most of it was wrapped up in exorbitant printing and ink costs. So you're trying to pass on the cost of a printed document to me, when you're only raising – that's not how you build customers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Online comics should be 99 cents. And that way it's cheap enough for me to start buying and reading and making subscriptions. And then all of a sudden you're pouring new money into it. That's gaming true. Is the same. How much longer are we going to justify buying $60 games when I upload them onto my machine and I cannot play the game without the cart unless I have a license that I have to also pay for?
I like that point, because I just recently got the new MLB The Show video game. And again, it's like you have all these multiple choices that you could purchase, but I could pay $60 for a disc or $60 for it to be a download onto my machine. And it's like, well, you know, they try to justify that here you can have one machine. If you change machines, it'll still be there for you, and you can, you know, part of PlayStation Plus membership. However, at the same time, it's like, but I know it is a cheaper product as a company, because you don't have to deal with the physical process of making a disc and to give it to me.
They have to have price parity with digital versus physical for the retailers, though, because they don't want to. If they start making it significantly cheaper online, then they're going to start losing shelf space for the actual platforms and consoles in the stores.
Yeah. True, but that's just contracts. And it's all about how long they're willing to maintain that type of framework.
And then I think PlayStation's move now with GameStop and other retailers saying they were no longer offering digital codes and taking ownership of it on their side is like kind of that signal that
starting to make the move.
I believe that at least when we get PS5, maybe the first party studios are not going to do maybe a physical disc, and they're just going to do pure digital.
Yeah. Where are you going to buy the console, though?
Yes.
See, Amazon. That's the problem. I mean, Amazon works for the coastal region of the US, but when it comes to like the middle of America, like that's.
But you can still get, you still, I mean, so long as you, I mean, but one of the biggest things with Amazon, what makes them so successful, is Prime. You get 2-day shipping by UPS.
Right.
Even you're in the boondocks, UPS may still find your address and deliver it to you. So for those people, I mean, internet access, you're right, may be an issue, especially with broadband quality. However, what's killing GameStop, you know, the Best Buys, isn't necessarily digital downloads of products. It's because you have cheaper means of shipping things like Amazon to them.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon is the Walmart of online. That's all.
Yes.
Facts. Yeah, and we're being honest, the technology has caught up to the delivery methods. And so now it makes more sense to have digital copies over physical copies, largely because I can download a whole game in 5 minutes. And that's the 5 minutes that saved me from driving to a store and having, you know,
putting on pants.
There's all these things that factor into it. And if entertainment is about convenience, then there are just some things that we are going to say goodbye to. And so, although I don't like to advocate for the closing of businesses.
Now, GameStop can go, though.
Yeah, places like GameStop, I've never seen the value of GameStop.
It's we talked about earlier how it become a really, really nice pawn shop.
Yeah, like I saw the value of GameStop, or I saw the value of GameStop, and it was about $350.
Damn it, Monster! Get off my lawn! I ain't giving you no $350.
In the beginning, it was necessary, I'd say. Back when it was called Funko Land and EB Games.
Right.
EB Boutique, but I mean, at this point, no, it's redundant now.
Yeah. Right, because they're I mean, we're looking at almost 10 years of GameStop's primary cost driver being used games, becoming a pawn shop for gaming.
Right.
Having digital copies erases that. Mm-hmm. You can sell digital copies $10 to $12 cheaper, even for new copies. And if you look, I mean, they're discounted all the time. The time it takes from release to that first big discount on a digital download is weeks or months as opposed to years. So the idea of used games, and I mean, there's no point to it anymore.
But does that also become anti-consumer?
Well, the consumer is benefiting in other ways. Again, one of the things I just talked about, the idea that if you show up and ask for something, that it's just going to be given to you without you giving up anything is injurious to us as individuals, as consumers, because we have an expectation that everything is supposed to go our way. That's how we got into trouble with Facebook. That's how we got into trouble with Twitter, is the idea that we're going to use this shit relatively for free.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that nothing will ever be asked of us. And then when it's asked for us, we all clutch our pearls and say, how did this happen? How can this be?
Nobody's paying attention.
Nobody's paying attention. We're only paying attention to our own personal gratification. Well, personal gratification that comes from being able to download and or stream games means that GameStop has to go out of business and that Best Buy is going to suffer. These are just realities of the deal.
So one thing I want to bring up, we mentioned this briefly again earlier, is that, you know, I play Overwatch. I like the fact they have a very diverse cast of characters. They have, we just realized that Soldier 76 is now gay. And
wait, what?
We're just now realizing
what? Yeah, he is, right? Yeah. Right. And we have Baptiste, who is Haitian, who's a new healer.
Poor Lucio, man.
Right. Well, remember, Lucio was a Brazilian pop star who also enjoys hockey.
And
yeah,
is a healer.
And
a
who is healer. Handicapped.
He is? How?
He doesn't have legs.
Are you serious?
Well, that's what, you're right. He has like robotic legs, right? Yeah. He has robotic legs. Symmetra has one arm. Yeah, we got to check all the boxes here. So,
oh, you didn't realize?
No, I just thought he liked rollerblades.
Nah.
That's the whole point of Overwatch is... Everybody just jumps in and plays that game, but that game is a very sad. Like, this is a future where everybody who showed up in this game, they were once someone better, and now this is what remains of them. Yeah. None of them have been left untouched from extensive robotics or body scarring. Mm-hmm. Hell, you had the ape who once was a man who had his brain put into a big giant gorilla. Outside of him, you look at the Diablo. This is a guy who... apparently, hardworking guy who was murdered, ratted out by his best friends or whatever the story shows. So Overwatch, although it is very poppy and very upbeat, this is a game of like genetic freaks who have all been betrayed by somebody.
Right.
So how do, have you had a chance to play Baptiste?
That's true.
I have. I tried. I couldn't play him on competitive levels, and I learned why. So it wasn't that big of a deal. Yeah. But once I actually started to play him, he is not a great player to jump into games like Deathmatch with. He is a support player. Mm-hmm. So he is a healer. And so his ability is best served in team play so that he can heal some people and he can do some damage. He's got a nice gun, but mm-hmm. I don't know that I would shoot. Just like Lucio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't situational. Like an individual quick play. Neither one of them represent, oh, I want to play with this guy.
But there's some things, Baptiste is a little special for me in the fact that there are certain nuances with his character that made me wonder, it seemed like a black person was in the room when they created him, only for that there's one emote he does, and the name of it escapes me. It's kind of like his way of saying, not say hello, but
he
taps his chest and nods his head, and he kind of like, not say blow you a kiss, but it is so old school LL Cool J smooth, and I'm like... Like I don't know, am I the only person that sees this with this character? Or is like,
I'm like, I mean, Baptiste represents a creation of someone who definitely has an actual black friend.
Yes.
This black is different friend. To say Lucio. No, this guy actually has a black friend and he likes him.
Right. You know what? I will help you out.
Right. I mean, his hair still bothers me, but like maybe getting black hair straight is like the final frontier in representation. Oh, but like, it seems like when it comes to black characters, are there certain nuances you're looking for in the game that makes you feel like, oh yeah, this is not just a black, you know, colored in avatar, but like there's some depth to this character?
Oh, I just think follow the Franklin example. I think if you look at Franklin, or you look at the kid from Watch Dogs 2, which to me, honestly, you know, because I go back and forth between this and comics, he made me think of the Miles Morales character. Mm. And Miles Morales was the biggest leap forward for black representation in comics history. And here's why. Black and Puerto Rican. I'm black and Puerto Rican. So I honestly got that. But he goes to a charter school that he won by a lottery. So he toes the line in two different worlds. And so the idea is, hey, this is what's actually happening out there. And so Miles Morales as a character, he's what we should be emulating in gaming because he straddles. And black Americans straddle so many lives. We don't all live in the hood. And when we find some measure of success, we don't automatically move to Bel Air. So there's this humongous, and I keep going back to the idea and the concept of the middle ground. And Miles Morales is standing. He is the king of the middle ground. And so if you ask me, what am I looking for in terms of depth of black characters? We got to keep going back to him because it is almost just as it was almost 50 years prior, where a white man created probably one of the blackest characters in cinema. Just I'll let you guess.
Mr. Popo.
No.
You said 50 years?
In about 50 years, the blackest character ever directly developed by a white man.
It's not Luke Cage, right?
No.
I'm not sure. Comic wise or movie wise? Oh, Shaft.
Shaft.
Really? Okay. Yeah. That was created by a white guy?
Ernest Tiedemann is a white man, or was a white man. Everybody thought, how many white Ernest do you know outside of like Ernest Goes to Jail?
Yeah.
But this guy was a former cop and he came up with this character. He wrote him and then he turned him into a movies. And he was always very adamant that John Shaft received neutral representation as a black man. He's a real black man, not a revolutionary and not a thug. This is a man who straddles the middle, but never gives up his blackness.
Yeah.
Same with Miles Morales, created by a white man, Brian Michael Bendis. And he is a character who holds up his blackness and holds up his Hispanic. And he straddles that line and he does it without giving up any level of his identity. So, fellas, that's what we should aspire to in our characters in gaming and in entertainment, because there is this giant chasm of blackness that doesn't necessarily have to be 100% issues based on something. You know, Issa Rae is able to create a fantastically layered character, and we need to do that for black men, but more importantly for black characters, because if you create great characters, white people will play with them.
True. That, you know what? I think that is the best way to like
absolutely
end on that. Like,
yeah.
Okay. So, man, that's awesome. That's
awesome. Yo, just driving straight facts.
Right. Okay. So,
this is why he's a good writer.
Yeah. We had another section just to go off of. We should do it, right?
Speed questions.
Yeah. So we had this like little speed round. So we have five questions to ask you. You can give real quick answers. Get you to pass if you want. First question: what's your favorite video game?
Favorite video game: Ninja Gaiden.
Wow.
You're a sadist.
I did not expect that.
No, Ninja Gaiden to me is still the best because it is an insanely difficult game, but even though you know you are staring frustration dead in the face.
Oh yeah,
you can't wait to do it.
Oof.
You played the last, what was the last iteration on PS2? The one with the red scarf?
Last iteration of Ninja Gaiden I played was Ninja Gaiden Black. And again, I stopped the game and I probably played it for a week and I'm like, it's too much, I can't do it.
Right?
So the thing is, it has to say something about a game that you can ask me, and that's the game that belches out first.
Ninja Gaiden.
Done. That's I'm crazy. Mixing it up with Shinobi.
That's okay, okay, second question. If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Good question. I think, and then you're never going to get the short answer from a writer, but I'm going to try to do this because succinct as humanly possible. I think mind control.
What was it again?
Mind control.
Mind control.
Mind control. Okay, okay. Ooh. Okay, I like that. I like that. All right. What has been the best moment you experienced while playing a game?
The best moment that I experienced while playing a game, I can tell you, it has to do with Tecmo Bowl. This is Tecmo Bowl 1. So me and a group of friends would always play, and we'd beat each other's brains out. And some days I'd be on the high end of it, and some days I'd be on the low end of it. And I remember this. I was playing one of my friends. His favorite team was the Chicago Bears. So he always played with the Bears. I'm playing with the Vikings. And he's just beating my brains out. And there's like a minute left to go in the game, and I just give up. But whatever I did, I threw like a 100-yard touchdown. Came back and won the game. And to me, to this day, and I've had like fun playing games, but if I ever think of what is that moment, that's the moment where I can even throw a game away and say, I've lost, I'm mad, I'm not even playing anymore. And then whatever the hell I did, I won the game.
That's awesome.
He wrapped up the controls and told him to get out.
Right. Don't ever come back. Okay, and if you could go on a drink with a character, who would it be?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
If you could go on a drink with a character, who would that be? Who would that be?
If I could go on a drink,
go drink
with a character, who would that be? I think it would be DJ from Street Fighter.
Street Fighter. Wow. Okay. Jamaican representation. I like that.
DJ's having a good time. And he's not like an angry drunk. You're going to go, he's the one that wants to go to Senior Frogs in Jamaica and pick up on all the cool stats. And I'm going to be there with him. And if any problems start, he's going to do the fighting. So that's the perfect person to go have a drink.
That's what's up.
Drinking and self-defense.
Right. Okay. And the last question. Who is your favorite black protagonist in gaming?
My favorite black protagonist in gaming. You know, I'm going to have to throw another curveball.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be the chick from the Resident Evil 5 or 4, whichever one.
South African?
Yeah.
I bought that game, and that was the first like you could like co-op. And that was the first game that I played in its entirety in one sitting.
Oh, wow.
Well, because that's, you know, that was the first time you could go online and have your partner be somebody.
Yeah.
Like multiplayer.
Yeah.
So I just hooked up with people and we played the whole game.
That's crazy.
And I dug her and I'm like, man, she's somebody that needs to be in more games.
Mm. Hey, well, if they continue remaking the Resident Evil games, maybe they might get to her.
We will see her again at some point, I'm sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Man, this has been a great cast.
Yeah.
Hisham, thank you so much for being a part of this and just giving the time.
My pleasure.
So we want to, before we wrap this up, we want to make sure that we get your social medias out there. So okay. For all this, who listens?
Well, first and foremost, you can always follow me at Twitter at neverdaunted.net. That's where I'm going to do the majority of my gas bagging. We have fun there. And one of the things about that Twitter page is I say a lot of crazy things and I'm not serious about any of it. But well, largely,
like your comments about Purdue?
Yeah. Well, I'm an Indiana grad. And so we have a blood feud hatred with Purdue. So I take a lot of pleasure today in seeing them lose last night. So all of that's 100% true. But I like to ruffle and rile a few feathers. You can also follow me at our website, which is www.neverdaunted.net. There's a wealth of content that's there. My favorite article that actually broke the site for a week is an article I wrote 2 years ago, and it's still getting a lot of reading. It's called White People Are Having the Worst Black History Month Ever. I should have followed up this year because black folks had the worst Black History Month ever.
Boy, did we.
In spades, and I'm not being facetious, but that's something that people go to. And then I also write for, regularly, I write for Yard Barker, which is www.yardbarker.com. We do a lot of lists, a lot of movie reviews, so please check it out. And hey, I appreciate being here. This was a fantastic conversation. You guys are doing a great job with this. I'm happy that you guys brought me on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's just been amazing.
Yeah. All right. I think with that being said, we can end the cast. This has been another episode of Press X to Start Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode as much as we enjoyed making it. Don't forget to rate and review us on your favorite podcasting app. Every little bit helps. If you miss any of this, you can find all the details and more on our website at pressx2start.com. Until next time, keep gaming.
Tutela.